Welcome to the latest edition of Wax Ecstatic. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thank you so much for joining us once again. As today, we're actually going to put the monster box of cards away. I know you're thinking, Matt, you promised us 87 Donruss. You said that at the end of the 86 Tops podcast. I know. And do you know what this reminds me of? If you're a fan of James Bond movies, if you sat through the closing credits, at the very end of the closing credits, it would say, James Bond will appear next in, and then it was the name of the next movie. And 98% of the time, they were always accurate. You know, at the end of Thunderball, it was, you know, James Bond will appear in You Only Live Twice. Except for at the end of The Spy Who Loved Me, 1977, it said, James Bond will return in For Your Eyes Only. Well, not so fast, because the space age TV dramas of the late 70s and, of course, Star Wars in 1977, they decided to change things up. They inserted Moonraker in 1979, one of my favorite James Bond movies and really one of Roger Moore's best performances as James Bond. He was either really good or really campy and goofballish. But anyways, that's what I'm doing here. I am pulling a Moonraker on you as we will talk 87 Donruss in our next podcast on Tuesday. But this podcast, I want to take a look at a really cool project. It is called the Wax Pack Book. Now, Wax Pack Book was one of the first followers to Wax Ecstatic on Twitter, at Wax and Gum Stains, if you're not following. And when I looked at the profile for Wax Pack Book, I went, wow. When I get to 86 Tops, I'm talking to the author of this book, as this is a really neat project. And we'll get into the details of it, but the short story is a gentleman named Brad Baloukjian, a couple of years ago, almost on a dare, it was just in conversation, said, well, what if I just buy a random pack of baseball cards, an old pack of baseball cards, open it up, look at the players, and then track down all of these players and try to get the stories of their life, of their careers, you know, basically see where these guys are 30 years later. And that's exactly what he did. In a 1986 Topps pack, he had actually 14 players because there was a checklist card in there as well. So he went around over a stretch of about a month and a half and tried to track down these players. There were a couple that were not cooperative. So instead of players, there's families, there's coaches, there's agents. And he is going to be telling that story in the book, the Wax Pack Book, which is set to be released in 2018. So we'll talk a little bit about the book, how he got the idea, some of the neat stories behind Wax Pack Book in just a few minutes. First, speaking of Twitter feeds, let's take a look at ours at Wax and Gum Stains. As always, you're welcome to throw any questions, comments, ideas, just stories of your baseball card collecting days at Wax and Gum Stains. We check it all the time. And of course, it is rather timely that we're talking to Brad Baloukjian and his pack of 86 Tops and his journey to find the players that were in that pack, as we just wrapped up our 86 Tops podcast. And even though I was not a huge fan of 86 Tops, and let me again clarify, even though I'm not a huge fan of that set, it's an okay set. It's not terrible. It's just not one of my favorites. And you can listen to that podcast if you want to get all the details on why I say that. But even though I wasn't a big fan of it, a lot of you were. Beans Ball Card Blog, a very big fan of the set. 791 cards from this set were my first cards ever. It's been an addiction ever since. Speaking of addictions, Diesel Tersu, in response to Bean's comments, same, 86 was my gateway drug to this hobby. Oh, it always starts with 86 Tops, doesn't it? I mean, that's what they taught you in school. Stay away from 86 Tops. You're going to get in very big trouble. Booby Main, that's the name. The handle is RobbieT86, so I'm assuming it's Bobby. But anyways, Booby Main says, great memories of collecting this set. Remember the day these came out, like yesterday. Stretch chimes in, I remember buying Cello 86 Tops packs and Cardboard 87 Donruss packs at Kmart and Venture. as a kid. I remember you could buy cards at Kmart. I think you still can now if you can find a Kmart that's still open in your neighborhood. Stretch also followed up with this question as we get away from 86 Tops, asking, there's a factory card seller wrapped 86 Donruss set for $30. Is it worth it? And do I put it in a binder or leave it wrapped? Well, your first question, is it worth it? Absolutely. That's a pretty good price for a 30-year-old set. And as we discussed in the 86 Donruss podcast, you've got some good star power there. Of course, the Jose Canseco rookie is the big card there. But also several young stars from the early to mid-80s and some established stars who started their career in the late 70s for the most part. And some longtime stars, again, like the Mike Schmidts and Pete Roses and Nolan Ryans. You've got those cards as well. But I would absolutely buy that for $30. That's a steal. And I would also say that you should keep it factory sealed. You should keep it in the cellophane because there's enough 86 Donruss out there and the market is not too overactive in that set to where I think you could probably buy a wax box for roughly the same price, maybe a few dollars more. And you could just rip through those and put together, if not a complete set, almost a complete set. So that would be my recommendation. Absolutely get that set. Keep it in the box and go out and maybe buy some lots or some wax packs. You could probably find a pretty good assortment out there for a pretty good price. Got the dreaded tweet from our good buddy Ben Adams. As he alerts us, just opened a 1988 Topps wax pack and pulled the dreaded double manager. Not the dreaded double manager. You got to be kidding me. For those who don't know, I am not a fan of manager cards, even though there are some pretty good managers. And there are also, you know, some managers who were pretty good players. And you know, some of our listeners said, hey, this is the only way I could get a Ted Williams card. You know, it was his manager card from the Washington Senators. Or this was the only way I could get a Leo Durocher card, you know, during the many teams that Leo the Lip managed. I couldn't afford any of their player cards from the 50s or 60s. So, you know, I get that argument, but again, I put the manager card beneath the team checklist card and even the plain checklist cards. So, yeah, Ben Adams sharing the photograph, too, as the dreaded double manager pack has Dick Williams, then manager of the Seattle Mariners, and Roger Craig, then manager of the San Francisco Giants. And both gentlemen, again, were pretty serviceable major league players. Pretty good managers. You know, Dick Williams was well-traveled, but had some good teams under his belt. Roger Craig, of course, helped get the Giants to the World Series in 1989, won a World Series ring in 1984 as the pitching coach of the Detroit Tigers. But as I've said before, and I said this back in the 81 Donruss podcast from several weeks ago, the only thing worse than a manager card in a fresh wax pack is two manager cards. So Ben Adams, my thoughts are with you on pulling the Dick Williams and Roger Craig dynamic duo from 88 Tops. You know, 88 Tops is a difficult set to, you know, spend money on anyways, because there's so many of them. They're not really a very good set. So if you bother to buy a pack of 88 Tops, the last thing you want is the double manager. You know, at least give me a Tom Glavine card. Don't give me Dick Williams in his swan song with Seattle Mariners. He only coached, I think, 23 games with them that year. One other note, and this comes from another frequent listener and talker on our Twitter feed at Wax and Gum Stains. Our good buddies at Baseball Card Backs brings up the point that Burt Blyleven was indeed inducted into the Hall of Fame. So my apologies to our loyal listeners. If there's one thing that I am a very, very big stickler on, it's accuracy, it's getting things right. And while I was on my riff about Jack Morris, should he be in the Hall of Fame, I noted that Jack Morris had at times teamed up with Burt Blyleven on Minnesota Twins broadcast a few years ago. And I just said, you know, hey, Blyleven's supposed to be in the Hall of Fame too. Well, he is. He was elected back in 2011, or inducted, I guess I should say, inducted back in 2011 after 14 straight years of missing on the ballot. And, you know, while I feel shame for totally botching up that fact, I will say the fact that Burt Blyleven is in the Baseball Hall of Fame actually adds to my argument that Jack Morris should be as well, because even though Blind 11 has more wins than Jack Morris, he has, I think, 33 more wins, and his earned run average is much lower than Jack Morris, about half a run. Still, this is a guy who had a lengthy career. Blind 11 won two World Series with Pittsburgh and with Minnesota. And then you look at Jack Morris, who was, a few wins shy and slightly more bloated earned run average, but he was the anchor of three teams that won the World Series. He won the World Series four times, and I would say he was the number one guy for Detroit in 84, the Twins in 91, and the Blue Jays in 92. Now, his arm was pretty much dead in 93 when the Blue Jays won, but still, he got a ring for that one there. So, again, my apologies, Twins fans, Burt Blyleven fans. I totally screwed that up. He is in the Baseball Hall of Fame. But again, I think it actually adds to my argument that Jack Morris should be there as well. And we certainly hope that Jack Morris gets inducted by the Veterans Committee. Again, you can send your questions, comments, stories at our Twitter feed at Wax and Gum Stains. And please do share the Twitter feed, Wax and Gum Stains, and our podcast, which can be found on Audio Boom on Tuesdays and Fridays with your friends. We've seen a lot of growth, a lot of new followers, a lot of great stories. Thank you for spreading the word. I appreciate it. And hopefully it keeps on growing and growing, because I've had a lot of fun doing this podcast for you. And I'm just seeing on the responses through social media and all the additions we've had recently, you've had a lot of fun interacting with this program as well. All right, so now we turn our attention to a very special guest with a very special project. This gentleman was actually one of our first followers of Wax Ecstatic. And when I saw the Twitter handle and the description on his Twitter profile, I got very interested into what he is doing. Now, his name is Brad Baloukjian, but his Twitter handle is WaxPackBook, and his website is WaxPackBook.com. And he is writing a book about a very unique idea in the baseball card hobby world. And this is something that really caught my attention because it's so unique. You kind of think, well, first of all, you think, well, why didn't I do that? But then you think, wow, this is a pretty ambitious project. I'm glad somebody's doing it. So, Brad, welcome to Wax Ecstatic. Thank you for taking a few minutes of your time today to talk about your love for the hobby, but also this very unique project.
Well, thank you very much for having me, Matt.
Now, again, the handle is WaxPackBook, and the website is WaxPackBook.com. So if our listeners go to either of those, they'll figure out very quickly what this massive project is that you're doing. But let's have a little conversation about it right here. What is the Wax Pack book, and how did you get the idea to do what you're doing?
Yeah, well, massive is definitely a good adjective to describe this. Basically, so I've kind of a very strange kind of non-traditional career. I actually teach college biology, but I'm also a freelance writer. And most of my writing, as you might imagine, is about science, about biology. But I'm always sort of thinking like a book author, and I'm always trying to think of book ideas. And as a kid, so many of us, you know, just those mass-produced 1986, 87, 88 Topps baseball card sets. I have thousands of those cards, and I'm a big baseball fan, and I'm very nostalgic by nature. And so, you know, I was having a conversation with my best friend about, like we often do, circling back to our, you know, all our favorite names from those cards in that era, like Sixto Lescano and Oda B. McDowell, and I got the thought in my head that, like, the idea of a single pack is very conducive to a book, right? You think about 15 cards in a pack, 15 chapters in the book is kind of average, you know, a chapter per player. And so I really liked this idea of, you know, kind of being constrained by the random nature of the pack. And that's really what generated all of the excitement for us as kids, was like, you didn't know who was going to be in that pack. And so I just kind of thought, well, it's kind of on a whim, like, what if I just got an unopened pack, you know, like off of eBay, and just said, okay, well, whatever combination of guys here I'm going to go with and write a book about. And then the idea kind of evolved, and it's like, okay, well, you know, I just don't want to write about, you know, the stats of these 15 guys. Like, As a journalist, I'm more interested in not just the baseball, but the stories behind these players as people. And so really it became the story of what happens to these professional athletes, you know, 30 years after they're at the top of their game. And what, take a random pack, what kind of common non-random themes can we find in the lives of these players after baseball?
And that's what really got me here is you read the description of the Wax Pack book on your Twitter feed. It says, I took a single pack of 1986 baseball cards and made a pact. One, I tracked down all 14 guys inside. We'll get into the details of that in a moment. Two, I chew the gum, which is absolutely disgusting. I'll be honest, and I'm sure a lot of our listeners will too. They've probably sneaked a nibble of 25 or 30 year old gum. So you're not the only one. But once you do it, you go, okay, I'll never do that again.
There should be a support group for it.
Yeah, there should be. At the very least, to extract the chemicals out of our digestive system. Good thing you're a biology teacher. You might know a little bit about that.
I know, right?
But third point was I'd write a book about it. And first of all, let's let everybody know the book isn't out yet. In fact, you're just starting that process because you just finished interviewing all the guys. When are you anticipating the book being available to the public?
Well, and that's a whole other podcast episode, is the process of making a book for all of you out there that want to do that. I would say we're probably looking at 2018. This is the first book I've tried to write. I've only done magazine and newspaper stuff before. And, you know, you realize really a book from conception to finish is probably like a four-year process. Right now in the writing phase, still don't know exactly, you know, when and where it's going to come out, but, probably, you know, I'll keep updating on Twitter and the website about those details.
Okay. So it is a work in progress, and a lot of the progress was tracking down these 14 guys. So for those who haven't quite opened up the website yet, the players are Rance Mullinix. As a Blue Jays fan as a kid, I absolutely love seeing Rance Mullinix as one of the cards.
What a great name, right?
Yo, Rance. Yeah, well, and plus he had the misfortune of looking like Ned Flanders all those years, too. So it was very easy to tie Rance Mullinix into everyday life. So you had Rance Mullinix, Al Cowens, Gary Templeton, Randy Reedy, Gary Pettis, Jamie Kochenour, Don Carmen, Vince Coleman, Dwight Gooden, and Coleman and Gooden, those were the 85 record breaker cards. Lee Mazzilli,
right.
Rich Hebner, Carlton Fisk, who almost threw a fit at me. I was a bat boy at a spring training game. And well, that's another podcast some other time. Rick Sutcliffe, and then Steve Yeager. And then there's also the checklist card. Did you have any troubles trying to figure out who to talk to about checklists, or you just kind of kicked that one aside?
Yeah, the checklist was kind of a real conundrum. Like, what do you do with a card that's literally a list of like 120 other cards? Yeah, so I played around with how to handle that and ultimately decided, you know, talking to my agent and editor, you know, let's just let that one sit and, you know, and just go with the other 14.
Good idea there. Our guest is Brad Balukjian, as he is going to be working on a project. Actually, he's already started on the project. It is called Wax Pack Book. And as he mentioned before, he's shooting for 2018, as there is a pretty lengthy process in not only writing the actual book, but also getting it out onto bookshelves. Now, Brad, when you look at the cards here. So you've opened up these cards and you realize, okay, minus the checklist, there's 14 people I need to talk to. Was it then that it kind of overwhelmed you? Oh my Lord, I've got to go track down 14 people, find out where they are, if they want to do this project. Did you ever get overwhelmed in the early days realizing what you had just talked yourself into?
Yeah, well, that's a great question. And in the spirit of full disclosure and transparency, I opened up a few different packs, right?
Ah.
Because I realized, okay, if I open just one pack, and if I get like the pack that's got five guys that are dead, that's a pretty short book. So I wanted to make this, you know, pragmatic and you know, be pragmatic and be realistic about it. And so the pack that I settled on was, to me, it had one guy that had passed away, which is Al Cowan.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I still was able to go and see the town where he grew up and talk to his cousin and his family. Well, I still have a chapter about Al. But, yeah, I basically had to sit down with a road atlas and kind of map out, okay, where are these guys? And then the other thing that, it kind of maybe goes a little unappreciated, or, I think sometimes people in the publishing process take this for granted, that just the part about getting access to the guides, right, is by no means something you can take for granted. And as you said, like, yeah, it was about a year of legwork to try to set up. Well, I mean, basically, you have to become kind of become a stalker, right? To find these guys and figure out how to reach them, and then will they cooperate? And I felt really lucky that for the most part, guys were great. I mean, it took some work, but once I got their ear, they were pretty cooperative and actually really fun to work with. And probably no coincidence, the guys that were the most successful in baseball were also the least accessible in this project.
And I find that very interesting, and I'm sure it's not only least accessible, but they were probably still a little guarded with some of their tales to tell. Obviously, Dwight Gooden has been in the spotlight with the 30 for 30 feature on him and Daryl Strawberry, and of course his, alleged continued drug use. But then, Carlton Fisk and Rick Sutcliffe and Vince Coleman. But I would imagine that some of the best stories came from guys that were a little off the radar, like Rance Mullinix or Don Carmen. Did you find that along the way?
Yeah, absolutely. That was sort of my thesis going in, and not to talk like too much of a nerdy scientist, but yeah, my hypothesis was confirmed that, I've always been most interested in the guys that were kind of the utility guys, right? Because my thought was like, well, those guys haven't been hounded their whole lives by the media, and, they've been able to kind of, and often, they're often the guys that really had to struggle to keep a job. And I think it's no coincidence that a lot of the most successful coaches and managers were not great players, right?
Mm-hmm.
I found that those guys that were maybe the more journeyman types were a little more thoughtful about their role in the game and the game itself. They had better stories. They were not so sort of jaded and overexposed by media coverage. And also, in the spirit of full disclosure, I did not get, to sit down and spend quality time with all the guys in the pack. But that's actually, I think, as a sort of a narrative device, better for the book.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I wrote a book about, I had a great time with all 14 guys and it was all swell, like, there's no dramatic tension in that story, right? So
right.
The fact that Carlton Fisk blew me off and I went to extreme measures like posing as a multimillionaire to sneak into the golf club in Sarasota, Florida, where he golfs to try to ambush him, that makes for a more fun story than like, Carlton and I had coffee. The story is much as much about the journey that I took. So I took this road trip that was 11,341 miles, I think, in 49 days through 30 states to find these guys. And even though I found most of them, the story of failure is as interesting, if not more interesting, than the story of success.
Now, this road trip, was this all one summer trip, or was this broken out over several months?
Yeah, somehow my 2002 Honda Accord survived to this day. This is the summer of 2015. I went in one shot by myself and did all that legwork back and forth across the country.
Wow, that's crazy. And by the way, I agree with you about the quote-unquote lesser-known players. They're not as jaded by the media. And I think especially 30 years later, they're thrilled to have somebody remember that they played baseball and can get the stories. I work for a hockey team, and the best sound bites come from the guys who are third and fourth liners or, borderline minor leaguers. And ever since I started Wax Ecstatic a couple of months ago, my favorite stories about the cards that I randomly pull, it's fun to talk about Jack Morris or Dave Henderson, names that people know, or Ron Kittle. But, my favorite stories are guys like Ed Romero and Doug Loman and, Larry Cox. It was a very sad story, but it was very interesting. So I'm with you 100% on that. Our guest is Brad Baluchian. I know you've got to get back to class. So just a couple more questions, Brad. Without giving away too many details of the book, because, of course, we all want to go out and buy it when it hits store shelves, was there a favorite story or a favorite moment other than getting chased off the golf course by Carlton Fisk in your travels?
there were a bunch. And, let me say that, like, what was really cool about this was that I'll just give you some highlights. I went bowling with Randy Reddy. I went to an art museum with J.B. Kokenauer and a 4th of July party at his house. I went driving around suburbs of Kansas City with Rick Sutcliffe. I went to the zoo with Don Carmen. So I did a lot of things that were not just sitting down and having an interview. Like, I really tried to get these guys out into a more, you know, a different kind of environment where they could kind of really loosen up. And also, as a writer, it makes for a more interesting story. If you put yourself in a setting that, you know, that kind of is more, involves more imagination than just sitting at a table. And so, so those stories were great, and the amount of access that I had, but also what I didn't expect was how many of these guys had really tragic and sad stories about their relationships with their fathers. And I won't go into all the details, but it's amazing how many of these guys really, you know, again, like 30 years away from the daily media spotlight and past all the cliches that they always had to spout, they really opened up a lot of them about, you know, how some of them used those sort of broken relationships as an asset in their playing careers, like guys like Rick Sutcliffe and Don Carmen, who had really tough relationships with their dad, you know, using that on the mound as sort of as motivation and sort of channeling that anger. And we got into that, and I think that was what, you know, that's what makes, to me, that's what makes this kind of transcend being just a baseball story and more about, you know, these guys' people is how we got into some of the real emotional stuff that goes into being an athlete.
Mm-hmm. And while this is a work in progress, Brad, and we know it's going to take several more months for the book to come together and eventually get published and out there, if you had a chance to do this again, and maybe this is a question we ask when the book actually comes out, because, you know, you're only halfway there, but if you had a chance to do this again, would you do it? Did you derive, I mean, I'm sure there was a lot of, you know, long nights trying to do this, but did you derive a lot of pleasure and really pique your curiosity with this random assortment of players from a baseball card pack?
Well, what's so fun is that you could do this again and have, and it would be, you know, potentially just as rewarding because you would get a whole other random, again, the random part is what makes it so fun, right? If it wasn't so exhausting, I mean, it's a labor of love, but, you know, I would love to do multiple sports, right? And you're always going to get sort of a different collection of guys. But the pack that I chose, very special also because one of the guys, Don Carmen, was actually my favorite player as a little kid. And so that's another layer that was really cool was, you know, getting to sort of know your favorite player, your childhood hero as an adult. And he's he was not an exceptional pitcher or a star, but he is a star in the sense of in life, and that, you know, he's actually such an anomaly for an athlete in that he, after he finished playing, went back and got his bachelor's, master's, and is now getting his PhD in sports psychology. And, you know, you can count the number of professional baseball players that have a PhD, you know, on probably one finger up to now. So that's, you know, he is a remarkable guy, and that's really borne out in the book.
And I can also attest, just looking at this card of Jamie Kokenauer, that's the last guy I'd expect at an art museum. But I'm sure there's plenty more interesting tales to be told. And even though it's probably going to be a year or a year and a half or so before the book actually comes out in print, I, for one, am looking forward to it because, again, this is one of those really neat ideas that, you know, up until now, I don't think anyone's ever really attempted to do it in this non-stalkerish way where you're sharing these stories.
Well, I have to say, for your listeners, you know, I'm very much like about getting, you know, interacting and getting feedback from people. You know, people have ideas about what they want to see more of or what piques their interest most about the idea. Please, like, email me, you know, tweet me. I love interacting with other baseball fans. You know, this is really an interactive project. And if people would like, I thought as I get going, it'd be really cool to use the website as a place to write about some of the stuff that doesn't get in the book, because anyone who writes a book, you end up sadly having to cut 90% of the material. Mm-hmm. And there's so much that out there that, you know, hopefully I can start to include some of that online.
Well, the website is waxpackbook.com. So that is where you can find some of the additional information, like you said, and also updates on the project. You took a year off from your travels to kind of formulate this, and now the process begins of putting those stories together. And again, the Twitter handle is waxpackbook. I highly recommend our listeners, if you're not already following Brad Baloukjian and Waxpack Book on Twitter, please do, because not only does he want to be interactive with our listeners, but also this is just a really neat project, and I think it's going to be fun for all of us to kind of watch it come together and see what the final product is several months from now.
Thank you very much, Matt. I really appreciate you having me on.
All right. My thanks to Brad Baloukjian. The website, once again, waxpackbook.com, the Twitter handle, waxpackbook. Give him a follow. Look at the website every now and then. Get the latest on this really unique project that he's doing. I remember probably about 25 or so years ago reading the book From Dodger Dogs to Fenway Franks, and the author of that book went to each and every stadium in one summer and did a report card on each of them. You know, now that's almost commonplace. You hear a story almost every year about one guy, or, you know, a father and son or two best buddies. They go hit all of these ballparks in a short amount of time. Well, back then, and he did that back in 1985, that was pretty revolutionary and mildly crazy. I think Brad's on to something here, and it's pretty neat to come up with the idea of, well, what are the stories behind the players in these packs? And I'm looking forward to hearing about all of those stories in the Wax Pack book. All right, speaking of stories about players, we're going to get back to it again Tuesday. I promise you, I'm not going to pull a Moonraker then. We're going to dive back into the Monster Box. 1987 Donruss is our next set. We'll pull a random card, talk about that player's life and career, and talk about another quality set from Donruss in a quality year for collecting baseball cards. I'm your host, Matt Salmon. Thanks again for listening to Wax Ecstatic. We'll catch you next time.